Hey y'all, welcome to the seventh part of my series on the vice presidential debate. This episode, I'm going to be briefly talking about families. I'm going to mention a couple things I forgot to mention in the life episode, and I'm also going to be talking about child care and child tax credits. So buckle your seatbelts. This episode is called The Vice Presidential Debate Part 7, Families. Let's get started. So to begin with, I do not think that child care should be a government issue. Child care is important, yes, but that's not a government issue. The government is not your mom. The government is not your dad. The government should not be stepping in and helping you with every little thing you encounter. I think that's a very dangerous mindset, and it's rearing its head on this issue because people are wanting for federal paid leave. What they really mean is they want to force employers to give people paid leave. I am all for, if an employer wants to provide paid leave, I'm all for it. If it's truly, if they are choosing to take on that cost. Because that is a cost they're taking on. They are paying you to stay home for a good reason, because you're caring for your kid. Or if it's being extended to, like, if you're helping a sick family member. That's a good cause, yes. But they are still taking on a cost because they are paying you to not come in and to not work. They are still incurring that cost and assuming that risk. Or that loss, rather. I guess it's not really a risk. Kind of is, because they're... generally, it's guaranteed whether their profits go up or down, but they're still assuming that cost. So, if they want to do that, great. I'm all for it. As I said, I'm about as pro-free market as you can get. I think Adam Smith and I would get along pretty well. So, what I'm not in favor of is the government forcing employers to do that. Because when these people talk about a federal paid leave program, that's a euphemism for we're going to force employers to provide this. Or at least to recognize it. And I don't think that's right. I don't think the government should have that power to force employers to do a lot of things they already force them to do. And I especially don't think they should have the power to force them to do anything else, such as provide this paid leave. Because that is the government is saying you will take on that cost no matter how you feel about it, no matter how it affects your margin. You know what that might do? That might lead employers to then hire less women, potentially, because women tend to be the ones who use more of the paid leave. Not saying men don't, but women use it more because women, you know, get pregnant, have a baby, you want to stay home with that baby, which is perfectly valid. I'm not saying it's not, but, you know, women tend to be the ones who use it more. So what you could potentially end up with, which I'm sure these people don't intend, especially since they like to yell and scream about women's rights all the time, but what you end up with then, if you force employers to provide paid leave, is you could potentially see the unintended consequence of employers hiring less women out of fear that those women will take the paid leave. Not saying that'd be the right thing for them to do morally, but that is a potential downstream effect that I don't think these people are considering as a possibility. So there's that. Also, a lot of federal programs, they don't support a more collaborative, some might say a more traditional child care approach. They don't have options to help support if, like, members of your church want to help you care for your baby. Or if, you know, the mom wants to care for the baby, but also the grandma, the aunts, the older siblings, the cousins, you know, other members of the family want to collaborate on that. Federal programs don't provide support for that. So they push people towards one model, and that one model does not work for every family. Because some families are bigger than others, and some families, people's work schedules are different. Some people, I think it would be great if everybody was firmly tied to a church, but not everybody is. So, I mean, yes, there are different, not saying there are different types of families, so per se, because a family is man, woman, children. At least that's what the immediate family is, or should be, because marriage is between one man and one woman, as well as God. So actually, it's between three beings, technically, but it's two people and God, and those two people are a man and a woman. That's the type of family that we should recognize, because that's the type of family that God designed. However, there are different types of family involvement, and there are different types of community involvement. And I think that these federal programs, whether they're well-intentioned or not, we can talk about that, but these federal programs do not acknowledge that, and it's one of the many shortcomings you have. And actually, that's one of the shortcomings you have with a government program in general. When you're putting together a government program, especially for a population as big as the American population, these programs generally assume one type of way of doing things. Whether we're talking about child care, whether we're talking about like the way that people buy food every month or every week, it's generally assumed by whoever develops these programs that everybody does things the same way, or these programs inadvertently push more people to do things the same way because of the way the programs are designed in and of themselves. And I can do an episode on that in more detail when I have more material. But that is a thought that I have noticed when it comes to the way a lot of these things are designed. So I think that's one of the problems with centralization is you try to fit the same round peg into a square hole, a triangular hole, an oval-shaped hole, a rectangular hole, a hole that's got, like, pointy things sticking out of it. I mean, you got all these different holes, and you're trying to fit the same peg into all of them, and it just does not work. That's one of the many flaws of centralization in general. Now I'm going to get into a couple things I forgot to mention in the episode on life. The first one being that, like, Walls tried to claim that the Minnesota law does not allow for children to basically be left to die, and I wish that was the case, but unfortunately it's not. It has been estimated that more than 8 babies have actually been born alive in Minnesota during a botched abortion and have basically been given quote-unquote comfort care or no care at all. Which either one I think is technically no care at all, because in either case the baby's basically left to die. It's not that much better than in ancient Greece when a child would be born and the child had some sort of disability or the parents just didn't want the child, whatever the case was. And the child would be left to die. He'd be left outside in elements and he'd die of exposure or whatever. And that's what you get when you take your society and you take it away from the biblical truth and you start to devolve into paganism. That's what you get. You get horrific human sacrifice. And the other thing I'd like to mention is Vance mentioned that states have different views. And he is right on that if we're talking about most issues. And as you know, I'm a socially conservative libertarian. I want government to be so small it can fit in your pocket, basically, especially at the federal level. However, the protection of human life is one of the few issues I do not think should be a state issue. Whether we're talking about abortion or whether we're talking about, if you go up to a man in the street and you shoot him in the head, I mean, either way is murder, in my book. Or if you have a cancer patient in the hospital, and you inject him with a bunch of morphine and you kill him. He dies in his sleep. You call it euthanasia. That's still murder. You still killed him. I think murder should be illegal just as a whole, because it's not only a sin against God, but it's also it's also violating people's right to life and by extension their right to liberty, as I covered in my episode where I gave a libertarian argument for being pro-life. You can't have liberty, you can't have a pursuit of happiness, you can't have your First Amendment rights, you can't have any of that if you don't have life. You can't practice free speech when you're dead. And if you can't exercise your right, then by all intents and purposes, you don't have it. A right is no good if you can't exercise it. It is useless at that point. So if you are not guaranteed a right to life, then you are not guaranteed any of your other rights, no matter what anybody says. I think that abortion should be pretty much banned at the federal level, under penalty of capital punishment, unless the life of the mother is at risk and there is literally no other option. Like, if all other options to save the child have been tried or are deemed to be not applicable because of the nature of the case, have been examined and have been proven to not be applicable. And even then, if the child can be given like a C-section and allowed to live outside the womb, even if he's premature, that should be considered if it's late enough in the pregnancy that that's doable. So that's where me and Vance disagree on this issue. Now I do think that this Supreme Court decision in 2022 was a start, because having child genocide only allowed in some states rather than forced on all the states is a small start. Just like if you have an entire apartment building on fire and you pour one bucket of water on it and it puts a small part of the fire out, that's a good start, but you still have a massive fire raging. There was one other claim made by Walls that abortion was both health care and a human right, but I've already debunked both of those, so I'm not going to do it again. So, thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, or at least become a bit more informed by it. You can find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, the RSS feed, iHeartRadio, and Pandora. You can also contact us on our Facebook page, Jesse's Fireside Chats, and on X at JFSCPod. And on Gmail, you can send us an email at jessesfiresidechats@gmail.com. That's JESSEAS Firesidechats, all one word, @gmail.com. Please feel free to pass this along to anybody that might be interested. And I hope you'll come back next time. Thank you so much. And have a blessed day.